Petru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Petru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Let me get my record button going here. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday, and it is the first day of August in the year 2005. And I hope you had a lovely weekend, folks, a nice weekend, or peaceful, or fun, pleasant, loving. I hope you had a nice weekend. And Alan Watt is with us this evening. I was looking for something that I wanted to share with you tonight, and I'm not finding it. I apologize for this. Oh, here we are. This is what I wanted to do tonight. This is St. Francis of Assisi's prayer for our spiritual message. Father, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, let me sow hope. Where there is darkness, let me sow light. And where there is sadness, let me sow joy. Father, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is dying that we are born into eternal life. And dying, you know, well, of course, dying is what we call leaving this physical body. Death, and maybe dying is also, it just occurred to me as I was reading this, folks, maybe it also means giving up the old, if you would, the lies. Maybe it means the rebirth, if you would, right here in this physical world, of coming into the truth, coming out of the lies. I don't know. It's just the thought I had. Alan, thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, cold and all.
Cold and all, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're sounding a whole lot better. Alan's been kind of down with the cold, and he was kind enough to come on with us this evening, folks. Alan, I have a letter here from a listener. I'm not going to read the entire letter, but I wanted to address this, and probably you'll have some relevant comments to make. And I want to thank our listener who sent this to me, because I know that it was sent out of kindness, out of the goodness of your heart. It mentions a book. And the listener said that they heard that the week before, 2 weeks before, when I had been doing all the research for the chapters in Jewish persecution and found out about the founding of America, Alan, and the revolution and all that. And he said that that I sounded despondent. And so he sent pages of a book, or she, because the individual just said concerned citizen. But the book is called OASHPE, O-A-S-H-P-E. Evidently, it's published by the Theosophical Society. And it says that America's history is in this book, 25,000 years of American history. And that according to this book, America was ordered by the ordained or ordered by the Creator to bring liberty and light to the world, and that America was to be used to bring the, I'm not sure, it's a handwritten, and I don't know if it's Kosmon or Kormon era in, but according to this book, OASHBE, Thomas Paine is the father of the American Revolution, and that seven of the founding fathers were graded 80 in the angelic realms, and it shows George Washington was under the guardianship of 1,000 angels. And when I read this, it reminded me of me some years back, because I had read a book, I think it was called Climb the Highest Mountain, and I cannot remember the group that put it out, but there was a section in the book, it was about the White Brotherhood, Alan, and there was a section in the book about the Constitution and how they were present, and how the Constitution was divinely inspired. And as I told you recently, not too long ago in a conversation, I believed that that was true. Mm-hmm. And I believed that there could have been whatever we would call them, higher beings there guiding our wonderful founders. And I would like to say once again thank you to our listener who sent this. And I want you to know that I did feel that way at one time, but there's enough evidence. There's just too much evidence. George Washington was an Illuminist. He was a member of the Grand Orient? Do you know, Alan?
He was a member of the Bienenorden, which was the Illuminati order. That they used the beehive as their symbol, and every Illuminati lodge was styled after the beehive, and all the Masonic paintings, the official Masonic paintings of Washington, you'll find the symbol of the beehive generally down towards the bottom of the portrait.
You've got that photograph in one of your books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that the first book?
I think so, yeah.
It's a photograph of a painting of George Washington. And there it is, the beehive down in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine is a Paine, all right, you know.
Well, okay.
you've got to remember, a lot of these guys adopted names of previous famous people, or else they were direct descendants of people, because one of the founders of the Knights Templar, his last name was Payan, which, of course, put into the English, and you've got Paine.
Payan, so, how would you... What that was? What language was that, Payan?
From the French, you know.
From the French.
Yeah.
One
of the nine knights, as they say, the nine knights who founded the Templars, one of them was Hugh, I think it was Hugh de Payan. And so it's no coincidence that you end up with a Payan or a Paine, who was a world revolutionary, because once he was finished, he came from England after trying to get revolutions going there.
Thomas Paine did?
Yeah, and he went to the U.S., and then he went over to France afterwards, too.
Yeah. Yeah, probably he went over there with Lafayette.
Oh, he did. He was part of the revolutionary in France, and he eventually got locked up by the guys who were leading the revolution, and it took a lot of pull from the U.S. to get him free.
Why'd they lock him up?
These were international revolutionaries.
Well, why would they lock him up if they were the guys that were behind the revolution?
Because he thought that was getting out of control with the killing off or the bloodlust. He thought they would kill off the nobles, but they started to chop up off the heads of ordinary people once they'd finished with the nobles, and he interjected to try and stop that, and that wasn't part of the agenda, obviously, and so they locked him up as well, you know. And I think so. He also didn't agree with the end of the revolution. It was supposed to continue into other countries and cause world revolution. That's also what he objected to, was that basically they made it localized and just in France.
So in other words, then it sounds like the possibility that Thomas Paine actually believed that the revolution... Because, you know, Alan, this is the thing that it makes them seem so right, is that the feudal system under the monarchies.
Mm-hmm.
The people were enslaved, and of course, what we read is that, you know, that the revolution is was what got rid of the monarchies and gave the people the democracies and all that. But is it a possibility that Thomas Paine actually thought that it would be a good thing for the people?
It could very well be so. It's difficult to tell with a lot of these guys because, in a sense, they're all politicians. They say one thing to the public, but they also do the opposite. It's difficult to say if he truly believed in this world revolution or he knew there was to be another plan that took over once it was completed. It's really hard to tell right now.
Yeah.
But I also know that the world revolutionaries were being trained in from the 1500s onwards. And Sir John Wilkes Booth, that shot Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth, he was named John Wilkes after a famous revolutionary of England who kept getting locked up in the Tower of London for trying to cause revolutions in England. So his father named him after this revolutionary. So this was in the family type of thing, you know. These guys were literally being taught and reared from childbirth to be revolutionaries. And of course it
continued. So then they did believe in it.
Mm-hmm. And even then, though, you see, to the ordinary working Joe, who was basically illiterate, it was no different from the Communist Party took over from the World Revolutionary Party.
Yeah.
It was one and the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys at the bottom were given a different spiel about what the outcome was to be from the guys in the upper management level of the revolution. It was to be a scientific social revolution where an upper elite would eventually run the lives of everyone at the bottom. Of course, the working man was told something completely different, but they needed the ordinary people to support them, the mob, as they called them, to get them behind them and to fight for them. And that's what they did in Russia, too, for the Soviet Union.
Yes, and under those systems, under the systems under which the people lived then, you could understand the people wanting to be out from under it.
Sure. And they really thought they were going to make themselves free. But just as we saw what happened in the Soviet Union, if we jump back to the French Revolution, we see the emergence of a much, much deeper and long, you know, something that was planned out long before, obviously, because they had population reduction, population control, whole departments set up for this. They started to kill off people in the rural areas because they wanted a certain figure in every region, as they called it. And they were sinking people by the boatloads just because they lived on this part of the land. And they wanted a fixed population, vastly reduced from what it was. And these were ordinary people they were killing, just peasants.
Just to reduce the population.
Yep, that's always been part of this agenda. And it was the same in the Soviet Union. Yeah. The Soviets slaughtered so many millions that no one can actually put a definite figure on it. But it's over 60 million anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Well over.
Yes.
And also, it was standard in the Soviet Union.
But, you know, that when we say 60 million people,
mm-hmm.
Oh, 60 million people were slaughtered, you a person has to stop and literally think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You think about... I thought about this. I thought about, Alan, I'm saying this for our listeners to really get it, folks, what he just said. For example, New York City, how many people are in New York about? Do you know, Alan?
Oh, I've no idea what it would be now.
We'll say 14 million, maybe.
Yeah, and greater, yeah.
Okay, or greater. We'll say 15 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're talking 50 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think about... Okay, picture a city, let's say, with the population of New York in it, and going into that city, and every single individual in that city is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It brings the numbers into some sense of reality, because that's so far out to imagine that they could have killed 50, 60 million people. It's just almost beyond our ability to conceive of that.
Mm-hmm. And yet that was all part of a long-laid strategy, a plan because Lenin, who obviously was tutored from childbirth for his particular coming role, started the reign of terror, exactly what they did in revolutionary France, the same technique. When you have no external enemy, no immediate external enemy to control the public, you must create a terror within. And that's what the Soviet Union did. They started to pick up ordinary citizens, next-door neighbors. Anybody would do. In fact, Lenin sent out gangs of henchmen, and he told them, Trotsky talked about this in his book called My Life, and Lenin ordered these gangs just to go into rural areas and take a dozen men from each little place, hang them from the trees and leave them there to rot. He said that will strike terror into the peasantry and they'll do what they're told. This is what you're dealing with these great heroes, you know. You're dealing with absolutely ruthless sociopaths. And they look upon the ordinary people, the champions of the working man, eh? These people look upon the ordinary people as the lowest scum that walks the planet.
Yeah.
That's what the communist followers can never get through their heads. It's a scientific socialism based on Darwinism, which is the right of the fittest to survive and rule those who are less equipped to survive. That's the whole doctrine, really, of communism.
And they create the the situation or the environment where those that are, you know, less able to survive, that's why they're less able to survive.
Yes, indeed.
Because the conditions, they create those conditions.
Yes, it's almost like someone having a cow and breaking the legs of that cow and then being disgusted that the cow can't get up.
Yeah.
That's what you find with the elite. Cause the problem.
That's a wonderful analogy.
And then they despise the people who are sick or starving and unemployed.
Unemployed, yes. Uh-huh.
So that's typical of how they rationalize everything they do. They always blame the victim rather than blame themselves. And that's psychopathic behavior.
Well, you know, getting back to the American Revolution,
mm-hmm.
It would be different if there wasn't so much evidence to point otherwise. The possibility that, I mean, because it all made sense to us as we were growing up, and, oh, this was the war for independence, you know, from Britain. But it's George Washington, who was so big a part of that, who was, he had royal blood, I understand. He was mm-hmm. an illuminist.
He was trained by the British Army.
Yeah, and they knew exactly what America was being founded for,
mm-hmm.
to do exactly what it's doing today.
And they put up that big obelisk in his honor. It wasn't a Christian cross. It wasn't anything to do with Christianity. It was an Egyptian obelisk they put up there for him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And what's his name, Thomas Jefferson?
And Thomas Jefferson was an admitted illuminist.
Yeah.
In fact, Thomas Jefferson, in his own memoirs, writes about Thomas Malthus, whom he corresponded with. And Thomas Malthus was the guy who came out with the economic policy for killing off the excess population due to economic reasons and how to feed them and starve them so they'd be too weak to run off on a plantation, that type of stuff.
And, you know, there's always these wonderful quotations you can find, like the one that George Washington, I think it was his speech that when he left office at the end of his presidential term,
mm-hmm.
and said, you know, to beware of tangling alliances with other nations and
yep.
all of that. And hell, they had, they had the American people in debt to Great Britain right after the Revolutionary War with
yep.
the peace treaty that was
mm-hmm.
and even in the Constitution, all the debts owed to other nations have to be paid, and it was the banksters, and George Washington is the one that signed the first Bank of America in the 20 what was it a 20 year thing that they had.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So sure, I mean, it's it's a serpent, as they say. They always use their symbols and everything. And the Bank of America, BOA, is a boa, like a boa constrictor, you know. Put a Z on the end of it, you've got Boaz, you know, almost. But
now, who is Boaz?
That's the Masonic Towers. There's always twin towers, the male and female, Jachin and Boaz.
Okay.
But Boaz means also the serpent. And that's why boa is a boa constrictor. It's a serpent. So the Bank of America has the clue right in it, you know. These guys don't make any mistakes.
No.
Yeah.
Well, let's be careful. They mean what they're saying, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't buy it that they don't ever make mistakes.
They literally created their language. The language we use is theirs.
Right.
And that's what I mean.
You mean they, okay.
By attention to detail. They don't come out with any abbreviations without being another meaning behind
gotcha.
It.
Gotcha, okay.
Like that. You know.
In other words, that's not a coincidence.
No, it's not.
Right, they know what they're doing.
You know, and of course then they brought Jacob Schiff over just in time for the American Revolution, for the Civil War, sorry. And Schiff was doing the same deal. He was even involved in the ownership of the companies that made the uniforms for both the North and the South.
Oh, for God's sake.
All through the Civil War. One of them, you just simply dyed blue, the other one was gray. But they were identical otherwise. So it's just one scam after another, but the people keep falling for it. That's the problem. That's the problem. We never learn, you know.
But sometimes
think,
it's
think
so hurtful.
Think of the
hurtful.
Money, too, that was also borrowed for all the wars since the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
There's trillions and trillions supposedly in debt, although it's all bogus, and we know it's bogus, but as long as everybody believes in it, it goes on. And I can remember when the U.S. owed $1 trillion, and at that time they said that if you put dollars end to end, it would stretch around the moon and back. And I don't know how many trillions of dollars the U.S. owes now. So you can't pay this off ever, and it's not intended to be paid off, obviously. How can you pay it off when your industry's gone overseas?
Well, it couldn't be paid off anyway because it's debt.
Yeah,
it's
debt.
It's loaned into circulation. It's a debt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To begin with.
Yeah.
And then they never print enough of these paper dollars and fives and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They never print enough to pay to have it in circulation to pay off the interest.
Yeah. And also a debt. If you're a debtor, you see you're in slavery. If you're borrowing money and you owe money, technically, even by the Old Testament rules, which are the Masonic rules, you are a slave. And everyone now flashes the cards for everything that they want. And
no, not everyone. No, not
well. The vast majority.
The vast majority, yes.
Oh yeah, the vast majority do that. it's a normal way of life now. In fact, they did studies recently, and they found that I think 70% of Americans and Canadians now are using the debtor cards and so on, and they don't handle cash at all.
The debit cards, yeah. Mm-hmm. I would venture to say that the majority of our listeners on Sweet Liberty.
Yeah.
Are not of that ilk that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I get many, many the donations that come in from money orders.
Yeah.
Or cash. And it's because so many of our, I believe a lot of our listeners don't even have checking accounts. I have one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to pay, I pay my public bills with it, you know, like mm-hmm. the gas and electric and phone.
Yeah.
But that's all I do. Everything else I do, I just do it cash. And it's just a principle.
Mm-hmm.
I just, it's none of their business where I'm spending my money.
Yeah, they also admitted now that they're issuing the same ID card that's to be used in the States. They're issuing it now in Britain.
Oh, yes.
And they've also admitted it's now also to be used for your banking as well. so it is to be part of the cashless society.
Didn't they bring that out right after that? Wasn't it recent that they brought it out?
Yeah, they did.
Right after that bombing.
Right after the fortunate bombings that happened right at the right time, when Blair was about to get tuffed out of Parliament for all his lies, these friends, these terrorists, just helped him out there, you know. It's amazing how they always come to the... I noticed that with George Bush, too. Each time that he was plummeting in the polls, Ben Laden just magically would send out another video saying, "We hate America."
Yeah.
Yeah, and Bush would come out and make his speech and be the strong man, and suddenly his polls would go up again. It's such a pantomime. You know?
Well, I'll tell you, Carol Valentine, she's the lady that has, and I haven't mentioned this in a while, so I should, folks, if you want to read what's actually in the Talmud, go to comeandhear.com, and that's come-and-hear. And she has scanned the Sansino, uncopyrighted version, and the accepted, evidently, translation, I guess you would say. Anyway, she did some really awesome stuff, you know, on these videos, these alleged videos by Osama bin Laden. And she put each of them side by side by side, and every single one of them were different people, Alan.
Yes. Yeah.
She did an email of that thing, and it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I say, isn't it amazing that it's always when they need something to happen that something always does? Yeah.
Well, remember Clinton? Where did he go bomb? Right around the Lewinsky scandal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah, the Sudan or.
Oh yeah, he was dropping the cruise missiles over Iraq.
Well, they were doing that. They were doing that ever since the first Iraq war.
Oh yeah, I know.
They were doing biweekly bombing runs.
Mm-hmm.
They had that country just absolutely blasted away.
Yes.
Before even the second Gulf War started, Iraq War started, Alan.
I know. But no, as I say, the revolution goes on, and what we're living through now is simply the next phase of the revolution, which is into the society which they've written well about in detail in many publications that's to be run by the experts, and there will be no private rights of any kind for the ordinary people, and they want a very controlled population right down to the exact number that they actually need for any particular job. Eventually in the future they said that no one will be allowed to have a child unless they have a function for that child.
Right.
So this is the next part of the same ancient revolution that's just ongoing, which they call scientific socialism. It's run by fascists at the top, of course, but it's a socialistic, communistic bureaucracy system that's used to control all of the people.
I just sent chapter 23 of the book over to Darren today. 22, I guess it was. And there's a list. I thought it relevant enough to have people see it, of the people in very high places in the U.S. government, those who call themselves Jews. And there was an article written by an American Jew lamenting the fact that was January 22nd, I guess. Wasn't that the inauguration or right after? Yeah. That there were no Jews in Bush's cabinet. There's a list of just, not all of them, but 34 of them. We have to take a break, folks. We're going to be back right after this with Alan Watts. Stay with us, please.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away,
the door. You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
And while you have your pen in your hand, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you do. Hope you got my address. I'll give it to you once again, quickly. And then we'll have Alan give you the information as to how you can get his books. And my address is P.O. Box 190, Millerton, M-I-L-L-E-R-T-O-N, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. I received a letter from a new listener, Alan. Mm-hmm. And this is the gentleman that had called you. He had sent a donation. He said he had been a listener for approximately 2 months. Mm-hmm. And he said, I find your program quite an eye-opening, myth-busting experience.
Yeah.
I admire your courage to put this kind of repressed information out before the whole world. Count me as a person that your show is in the process of, quote, waking up. He said, I've sent for Alan's book one. Last evening I spoke to him via phone to elaborate on some points I've heard him make on your show. He's fascinating as well as enlightening person. Thank you for having such a guest as well as the access. And that's from Bill in New York. And Bill, thank you. I appreciated that. It's nice. I always enjoy hearing from our listeners, and it's nice to know that we have new listeners coming in that are waking up, Alan, mm-hmm. because there could be no other reason for doing this broadcast if it
That's right, yeah.
wasn't just to, and sometimes it does seem like a downer. I would like to do a broadcast one time that's uplifting, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't... the truth. Well, it isn't very. It is uplifting to know the truth, but the truth can hurt. And I do know that because, and I wanted to say this to our listeners too. If you haven't read Jewish Persecution, it's free online, folks, at sweetliberty.org. And I've heard from many people who've read the book and what's done of it so far and have said, basically, in their own way, the same thing over and over, how it put so many puzzle pieces together for them. And if nothing else, if you have doubts about what I've been discussing regarding the chapters that I just finished, I would suggest about America, read chapter 12 and then do 16, 17, and 18. And I think there's enough researched and resourced information there that you will understand why I no longer buy into the America, the land of the free and the home of the brave. It never was from the beginning. It just never was. And I'm going to let Alan give you the information now on how you can get his books. Alan, go ahead, please.
Yes, there are three of them. They're called Cutting Through, 1, 2, and 3. And they're $25 each, payable in U.S. international postal order. It's got to be international, which you get from your post office. And
or
you
cash.
Send them to the address at Alan Watt, which is W-A-T-T. And the address is Site 41, which is S I T 1-800-273-4141, Box 4, Estaire, which is Estaire, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, 1. And my telephone number is 705-695-0416. And I'll send them out as soon as I can. And they go through a lot of this history of Freemasonry, pre-Freemasonry, and I go back thousands of years to show you how the money system was taking over countries 2,000-3,000 BC, and how the armies were formed once they had the money system in circulation, and then they used one army to simply go and force the same system on the neighboring country or the neighboring tribe, and this has gone on right up to the present time.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what's so mind-blowing,
mm-hmm.
to realize that it just goes back and back and back, and it's the same thing. It's like when you were telling about Sumer at least 6,000 years ago, and the guy who wrote the book, what was it called, Alan? On Sumer.
Yes. Uh-huh.
What was the name of the book?
Oh, the book on Sumer was Life Begins at Sumer.
Life Begins at Sumer. I've written that down.
Yeah, and they have a blurb there. It was written on slate by, they think it might have been a student, because they had a tremendous school system 5,000 BC for the bureaucrats. These guys who became the priests, specialized priests in different areas, even real estate ones, and other ones went into law. And this guy said that I look from the east to the west horizons and I see nothing but government buildings. And they tax the people for everything. He said when they bring in the fish, they're taxed for catching the fish. They're taxed when they sell the fish. He said, and even when the relatives come to the grave sites to put offerings on the graves, they come and they take the death duties, the death taxes. They take the food from the graves. And this was all government officials, 5,000 BC.
And you're saying that this book was initially written back then?
Oh, no, I mean, the
he said it was written on, like, oh, he found all the information on
Sumer. Yeah, they've dug up so much writing from Sumer, it's just amazing.
And they've been able to interpret the language or to,
it's down to fine art, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it's nothing like the one that Zachariah Sitchin invented.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But, they've dug up the remains of old schools, where children at 5 years old and 6 years old were being taught geometry and so on, and trigonometry. This is common, yeah. So man is far, far older than they'd have us believe, and they had advanced systems thousands of years ago. I'm sure Sumer simply was a sort of revamped system, a new system of a new age of its day, but there's no doubt that the knowledge came from a much earlier civilization. And they do talk about it in the tablets of Sumer, that at one time there were advanced civilizations, and tremendous earthquakes hit the whole planet, and some of the continents sunk beneath the waves and took the cities with them, and new continents arose out of the sea. So man is far, far, far older than they'd have us believe. Of course, they don't want us to understand or even know that, because science has always been so far advanced from what the public will ever know about. The gimmick is to make the people believe, through the publications they give us, that they're just working on this and that they're looking forward to improving that one day or inventing some. This stuff has all been done long ago. That's why it's called research.
Yeah, like hydrogen cars.
Yeah, research.
They're saying that. I read an article from California, some guy that had a hydrogen car to use. I think it was from, I can't remember, Daimler,
mm-hmm.
he said it cost $1 million to build that car.
Mm-hmm.
He was able to use it so that he could experience it and then write about it. It was in maybe the Chronicle, one of the California papers. But Alan, that what hogwash.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, that technology is about 10 years down the road.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No, see, it was never intended that the American public drive forever. They only gave you that the transportation during the industrial era. That's China's now having their industrial era, so they're putting down roads, they're giving them cheap cars and cheap gasoline.
And do you know that the automobiles that are being manufactured and sent to China have none of the emission controls on them?
No, they don't need them.
Yeah. No,
so,
well, because
they're all hogwash anyway.
Yeah, right. They're trading off the air.
Yeah.
They're trading off the air pollution credit.
That's right. You pay a fee for it, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but no, it was never intended to. Once America had finished its job, which it hasn't quite done yet, it's got to force the last of the remaining Muslim countries into the same system of democracy, as they call it, with a central banking system, their debt system, and their paid politicians for front people. That's the last job that the U.S. has to do. And as it's doing it and finishing it off, they're dismantling America back home. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, do you want to hear something?
Mm-hmm.
This came right from the U.S. EPA, Environmental Protection Agency's website, that there is a partnership between the U.S. and Israel
mm-hmm.
to monitor the quality of drinking water, Alan.
Yeah, well, actually, in 1967... the UN had its first water meeting in Israel, and
well,
it was in the newspapers at the time, and they said that water would be one of the prime monies of the future. It would be actually used as like money, and that Israel was heavily involved in the planning for the future shortages of water. So I'm not surprised, you know. That was in the newspapers at that time.
Yeah, well, U.S. and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Partnership.
Yeah, well, they had partnerships all across the world, though, with just about everybody else, with one deal or another. And it's not a country either. You see, we keep falling into this trap of believing there's a country there or a country even here. It's always a handful of people run every country, including Israel. You know.
And I suppose, I don't know if Israel is a corporation or not, but the U.S. is actually literally incorporated.
Yes, uh-huh.
And do you think Canada is Canada a corporation?
All British Commonwealth countries are, yeah. That was where it first came from, was England.
And, you know, comment on this. You know, George W. Bush, the president, appointed Wolfowitz to be the head of the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
How is it that the U.S. president is in that position to appoint head of the World Bank when the
He's told what to do.
That's not the point.
It's just to fool the public.
Like the World Bank is under the authority of the U.S.?
That's what I'm saying, it's to fool the public. The public must believe their government is real.
Well, you know, it occurred to me, and it just occurred to me today, when I was working on that chapter 22, that maybe the world bankers, the international bankers, own the U.S. corporation now. Maybe they own the corporation, Alan.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how could you? Okay. I mean, it's just. There has to be an explanation.
Yeah. It's
how
like
the
China,
U.S. president appoints the head of the World Bank.
Yeah. Well, of course it's nonsense. The president is only a front man. The prime minister of Britain is only a front man.
Well.
And that's well understood.
Well, I know that. Mm-hmm. I know they're front men. Mm-hmm. I know they're puppets. The point is, there has to be some legality here. You know, they got this twisted you know, legal system.
Mm-hmm.
The treasurer, the secretary of the treasury, is the governor of the International Monetary Fund, Alan.
Yeah.
And I've got the newspaper article that says it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know newspapers lie too, but sometimes they print the truth.
Yeah.
And
no,
it was in passing.
They have to fool the public and make them believe their government is real and powerful.
But what does that tell us about the U.S.
Yeah.
Government Inc.?
Mm-hmm.
If we aren't a closely held corporation by the international bankers,
mm-hmm.
We are the, what do you call it, the assets, the...
Yeah. That's right. We are. We're supposed to keep paying off the debt and your children's children and so on forevermore, you know. So that is true. We are all collateral for the debt.
Collateral, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's no different from the feudal system. That's what you were, you know, you served the Lord, you had no rights whatsoever because you were born into slavery as a slave. Only they called it serf, they changed the English language a little bit and called them serfs because slavery was a bit too upfront, you know. So they hid it behind the term serf, but yeah, you own nothing. You gave 60% of all your produce to the Lord and what was left had to feed you, your animals and your helpers, you know. And when you work out the income taxes today and the hidden taxes, the average person is paying about the same amount of money in taxes. So serfdom or feudalism is still here.
Oh, I'll bet lots more today.
It's actually more in Britain, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
And Canada, yeah. So this con game has gone on forever, and it was Charles Galton Darwin that said in his book, The Next Million Years, and that's quite a boast for the Illuminati, He said himself that there has always existed a form of slavery, and we are simply creating a more sophisticated form of slavery where the slave will never realize that he is actually a slave.
The perfect slave believes he's free.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So they give you brass bands and you wave flags and stuff, and you know, you get parades, and you're allowed to buy your auto to get to work to pay for that clapboard house that you put up there, you know. And pay the taxes on it. So we're just a more efficient form of slave where we don't really need to be guarded all the time. We even buy our own clothes out of what's left over and our work boots, you know. So, yeah, it is a more sophisticated form of slavery.
And you have to have a license to do everything?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, everything's a privilege, you see, in a democracy.
Well, and the definition of a license,
mm-hmm.
their own definition...
Yeah.
Gives you the right to do something that would otherwise be illegal.
Yeah, that's why it's a lie on your senses. It's a license.
License, yeah. Uh-huh. It's a lie on your senses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yes.
Because, yeah, sure, that's exactly what it is. You pay a fee, you pay money, then you can do it. That's everything is like a...
So it would be illegal to fish, see?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, that's what they're saying. You mm-hmm. have to get a license to fish.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
right.
So they're giving you permission with this license to do something that other... So they just make they make living illegal.
Well, sure they do. And in fact, it's no different from the Soviet Union, where you cannot do something during the course of your day where if they want to, they can get you because you'll break one law or another just walking up the road, you know. And that's what it's come down to. Most of the laws are on the books in case they ever want to pull you in. Anybody that is in. You know. That's why they don't take laws off the books. So it's... Now we're living in a prison, and it's just that you don't see the bars until you try to walk out of that prison without permission.
There
then people appear out of nowhere that you never saw before with strange badges and plain clothes, and you find out, my God, there's another world out there that I knew nothing about.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Gotha, was that there is none more hopelessly enslaved than he who believes he's free?
Yes. But sure, I mean, how can you be free when you're born as an asset, basically? to
and
pay off
a debt.
And
you have to get a certificate of your birth.
Yeah, well, even Thomas Jefferson, who was a member of the Illuminati, and this is the amazing thing, the Illuminati spoke openly because they knew the public would take it one way where they could take it themselves another way, the same statement. But he did say that a generation born into paying off a debt incurred by a previous generation are therefore born into slavery. And he said that it's possible, you know, in a different system, he said, for every generation to write off the debt of a previous generation. And he talked about that. So they knew all this stuff. They knew it all at that particular time. They were well aware of it all.
And just because he said it, mm-hmm. and he's quoted it, people think that he said it as a warning.
They always give you a legal warning.
Yep.
And it's like Benjamin Franklin saying, what have we got? Well, a republic, if you can keep it. That's the same tongue-in-cheek as man speaks with a forked tongue, you
right.
know. He's giving two different statements depending on whose point of view you take it from. The Illuminati's or the man in the street. In other words, Franklin knew darn well from the beginning that you'd never keep it.
You
it
know,
wasn't intended that you would keep it.
Thomas,
but you never really had it.
Right, exactly. Thomas Jefferson made a statement about a revolution, that something about every 20 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That maybe there needs to be a revolution.
That's to clear out the ones at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they become lazy, corrupt, and they start immediately to try and get their offspring into the same positions. And Jefferson admitted that, that as soon as they had the older guys beginning to retire from government, they were already getting their offspring in. Benjamin Franklin tried to get his son, was called Temple, by the way. He
Temple?
Tried to get him into a government position, but he was unsuccessful. But other members did get their offspring into position. So you end up with these hereditary oligarchies, basically. And it's no different today. I mean, you get Bush number one, Bush two, Bush three, you know. It goes on and on and on. And they're all intermarried, so it doesn't matter what name they use. If you go back in their histories, you'll find they're all cousins. So, yeah, you're voting in an oligarchy.
Well, yes, just a reminder that evidently Bush and Kerry were third cousins.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Both members of Skull and Bones and...
And the royalty of Europe.
And the royalty of Europe, yes.
Yep. And that was published by Burke's Peerage, which is the Queen's official genealogist. So it's true, these guys are all related to royalty, and I really don't understand why people keep falling for it and voting for people who promise them things but never live up to it.
Well, basically it comes down to this. It doesn't matter who you vote for today. I mean, it never did anyway.
Uh-huh.
Because they always gave us our choices to let us think we had a choice.
Yeah.
And I've found that out fairly early on.
Mm-hmm.
But today, with vote, the way they can skew the votes, it doesn't matter who you vote for. Even if there was somebody decent running,
yeah.
whoever they want in office is going to get in office.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Period.
Yeah, it's arranged before the fact, you know. To
well, yeah. I mean, Bush didn't win the first one. He didn't win the second one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and also, I mean...
Not that I would want Gore. I mean, that's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
But evidently they felt that GW would be able to suck in more people, and I think they were right.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many people... that I've heard make statements such as, thank God we have a Christian, a president who's a Christian.
Yeah.
And many, many people really believe it, that God told him to go to war to Iraq.
Yes, uh-huh, yeah. Well, I've no time for people who follow anyway. In fact, that's one of the Illuminati's most powerful assets, is the fact that people are so willing to be organized into camps to follow, and all you have to do is put your guy in at the top of the camp. Then so rather than persuade a few million people, you've got one guy in charge of them all, and he does all the talking. you know.
Yeah.
That's the secret about creating groups. And you've always got followers which are easy to take over by putting in your own man. That's what they've done for thousands of years. The same nonsense, you know. So it's the 87% of the population who are followers, and unfortunately they're always with us as followers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is. You know, they've done studies on this at universities for the last 100 years, and they find it consistent that 87% of the public in any country don't care who's in charge as long as they can carry on with their lifestyle as it is at the moment.
Well, and as their lifestyle continues to change,
yep.
They
mm-hmm.
still want their lifestyle as it
general.
Is,
mm-hmm.
no matter how terrible it's become.
That they adapt so quickly, and that's why they used the term that man was made out of malleable clay as early as Egypt, made on the potter's wheel. And, of course, that was copied into the Old Testament. But what they meant by that was man was the most adaptable creature on the planet. He adapts so quickly to every circumstances that's thrust upon him. And as Zygmunt Brzezinski said, when he was asked what he thought of the ordinary people, wouldn't they rebel if the U.S. ever, you know, clamped down and took the rights away? Brzezinski said, he says, what do I think of the people? He said, well, put it this way, you can beat them, you can starve them to death and do the rebel. He says, no, they just turn around and eat their dead. So that's what we're dealing with here. These people understand the human nature. They know that people will put up with tremendous hardships, horrible hardships, before they'll do anything about it. And often when they do something about it, their backs are against the wall, they're unorganized, and it's too late for them. And they know this too. That's why they give us false leaders to follow on every side of everything. So they understand this perfectly well.
Yes, they do. We're out of our hour.
Uh-huh.
And I thank you very much for being with us here tonight, Alan.
That's a pleasure.
Yes, and ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back with you tomorrow night. I still don't have my printer working. And there are a few things that I have been wanting to share with you, but I can't get them printed out. And Alan is very gracious always to come on and with us and add so much. Well, just basically without, I don't know what I'd be doing right now, Alan. Thanks a lot. All right, folks, we'll see you tomorrow night.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War and the Right of Succession from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
We're here at the International Airport, where Amazing Alan will have a tug-of-war with this